Morning.
What did I take that sheet?
These. Thank you. Your sister Rav. Yesterday we started talking a little bit about what year the Churban HaBayis took place in, and why does it make a difference to us. And one of the issues that we discussed is what year was Adam HaRishon created in. What year was Adam HaRishon created? And we had two different opinions amongst the audience. Some people said that Adam HaRishon was created in the year 0, and some said that Adam HaRishon was created in the year 1. Now, I looked into this a little bit more over yesterday afternoon, and I discovered that there is indeed a machlokes amongst the Rishonim about what was the year in which Adam HaRishon was created in. However, the two opinions are not 0 and 1, but rather, if it's not 0 and 1, what must the machlokes be? 1 or 2? 1 or 2? So let's just go through for a second what these two opinions are. We know that the sun and the moon were placed in the heavens on the fourth day of creation. And Adam HaRishon was created on the sixth day of creation. So time began in the way that we know it before Adam HaRishon was created. The day of the creation of Adam HaRishon was what day of the year?
It was
the sixth day of creation. When we count the years from Adam HaRishon, when we count the years as in Rosh Hashanah, was the world created? The first day of creation was Rosh Hashanah. The second day of creation was Rosh Hashanah. Which day of creation was Rosh Hashanah?
Yom HaRasola.
Is the first day of creation or the sixth day of creation?
Yom HaRasola.
We date.
Feels we say Yom HaRasola.
This is the beginning. Literally the beginning. Around the beginning. I think that Adam HaRishon was created on Rosh Hashanah. The sixth day of creation was the first Rosh Hashanah. And so there were a couple of days before Adam HaRishon was created where time was already in existence. The cycles of the sun and the moon were already set into motion. And this was all before the first Rosh Hashanah. The couple of days before the first Rosh Hashanah is called by the Achronim the Shnas Toyu, the year of Toyu, after the pasuk that says Ha'aretz Haisa Toyu Vavayu. And the question, the debate amongst the Rishonim is whether the Shnas Toyu counts as a year. So was that the year 1? It means that Adam HaRishon was created on Rosh Hashanah of the year 2, right? Or was the Shnas Toyu not counted as a year? It was not a full year. It was not a year in which man existed in the world.
There was nothing.
There was progressively more and more. On the first day, there was Tohu Vavohu. On the second day...
I'm talking about the first day.
Right, but the Shana, the year itself... Is classified, is described as a Shnas Tohu, but time was already in motion during that year. So do we count it as the first year because time already began to move during that year? Or do we say that no, it doesn't count as the first year, it counts as the zeroth year, and the first year starts from when Adam HaRishon was created, from that Erev Shabbos, from the Yom HaShishi, that's when time begins, that's when the cycle of years begins to be counted. That the second year of creation would be the first year that we count for creation.
Don't we not know what time was like, at least before Adam? Maybe
no, but Hashem is timeless.
Until Noah or somebody, the time may not have been as we know it now, and an hour may not have been the same length as it is now. Therefore, what's a year? What's a...
They talk, the Association of Orthodox Jewish Scientists published a book where they had essays from a lot of big Talmid Chachamim who suggested that before the sun and the moon were set into motion, so we know that there were days before that time, and maybe those days were much, much, much longer than the days of the sun and the moon, because obviously those days before the sun and the moon were placed in the heavens weren't measured by cycles of the sun and the moon. So maybe they were measured by some other time span. Ki elef shanim be'enecha ki yom esmol. And that's what they wanted to use to explain, or a possibility they wanted to suggest, to explain the existence of fossils that seem to be much older than 6,000 years, and to explain the existence of carbon dating of certain things which seem to date them as millions of years old, rather than saying that the world was created with these misleading objects or artifacts to make it look older, they wanted to suggest that maybe the world was created in 6 days, but the first couple of days before time began, those days were much, much, much longer than a classical day where time exists. We find that...
I guess the question is, how do you define a year then? Is it a year 365, whatever it is, cycles around the sun, or is it some, other definition of what a year cycle?
Right, we talked a little bit yesterday also about a calendar year versus a personal year. A calendar year, we say Yom Echad B'Shana Chashav Shana. If a king, right, somebody brought this up, if a king was anointed and was coronated on the last day of the year, if it's a Jewish king, it could be Chavtes Adar. If it's a non-Jewish king, it could be Chavtes Elul. And if he became the king on Chavtes Elul, then already by Aleph Tishrei, it's his second year of his reign. And so by that standard, even one day in a year counts as a year. But in terms of the Me'es Le'es, in terms of the personal year, so it's got to be 365 or 354 days. In the case of the world, of the sun and the moon and the cycles of the heavenly spheres, so it would seem that we're counting by calendar years, because if we count by personal years, years that are personal to the sun and the moon, then really Rosh Hashanah should be the day that the sun and the moon began to roll, the day that they were set into motion. The fact that we don't count Rosh Hashanah from that day indicates that we're counting some other type of year. So it is very reasonable for us to count the first year as those 5 days, just like a king who was anointed on Chafei Elul, right? The 5 days between then and Rosh Hashanah are his first year. So the sun and the moon, which were set into motion on Chafei Elul, their first year already finished after 5 days, and then their second year began. It's just like a king. Just like a king. Thank you so much. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam
shehakol nihyeh bidvaro. Amen.
Just like a king. Sorry.
You said there also some scientists that say that before the 4 days, there's no sun, moon, it could be a day to be much longer. Other people say that the world doesn't compute it. But the government mentions many times to be just the only one to find this order. So that would be misleading then. You say Shekhar's open in our mind, the 6 days. So that would be misleading there.
Yeah.
If you say every 4 days of 1,000 years of years, then many times the Torah mentions Shekhar's open.
Yeah, I don't want to go into it right now. From what I recall, I think that this article was written either by Rav Schwab or by the Lubavitcher Rebbe. There were big names who wrote in this book. I don't remember exactly who it was, but I don't want to get into questions that might border on kfir either. A book. It was a book. It was called Challenge.
Oh, Edgar. Edgar. The Challenge, or Edgar.
Okay. So this is a machlokas we shown him whether we count the Shnas Tohu as the year 1 or whether the Shnas Tohu is the year 0. Adam HaRishon was born the year after the Shnas Tohu, so that would make it either the year 2 or the year 1. Now, a little bit of what informs this, you would think that the question is whether we date the beginning of time from the sun and the moon, or whether we date it from man. Maybe the years, when we count the years from Bries HaOlam, we count from the creation of man, just like Yom HaRas Olam is referring to the day that man was created, and not to the day that single point from which God withdrew the entire world was created.
What's the practical difference to us, if it's 1 or 2? I think I have an idea, I have an answer.
We'll get there in a second. It's on the second side of this sheet over here.
Birkas
Hachama.
Because that will be every 28 years. So, the Adam HaRishon make Birkas Hachama? The first one?
Sure. That, I don't think there's a practical difference.
And also, on the 28th year, he lived 900 years. He could have made all those Birkas Hachama.
Yeah.
I just wondered if he made a... But that's nafkamina, Birkas HaChama. Do you count from year one or two?
With Birkas HaChama, we count from the time that the sun and the moon were created.
But that bears on this discussion.
Yeah.
Next question.
Year one or two.
Right. So, for me, the nafkamina is when Shemitah is. We'll get there in just a second, because remember, we're trying to establish the chronology of when the second Beis HaMikdash was built and when the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. We're trying to establish that by means of counting from the year that Adam HaRishon was created and going down the list. And we saw that Adam lived for 130 years, and then Shase was born, and then Shase lived for 105 years, and then Enosh was born, and so on and so forth. And if Adam HaRishon was created in the year 2, that means that every single number in the far right-hand column on the second side of this sheet, where it talks about the total number of years, you have to add 1 if you want to know what year it was, Libriyas HaOlam. Adam HaRishon was created in the year 2. And therefore, when Adam HaRishon was 130, it was really year 131. And then when it was year 235 that Enosh was born, it's really 236. And if you go on down the whole list, you'll discover then that by adding up all of these numbers, even at the time that the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in 3828, but we have to add on 1, because 3828 is 3,828 years after Adam HaRishon was created, which is 3,829 years after Briyas HaOlam. It's a 3,829th year of Briyas HaOlam. So if you add on this Shnas Tohu, if you consider the Shnas Tohu to be the year 1, and Adam HaRishon was created in the year 2, then you would say the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in the year 3829 LeBriyas HaOlam. As opposed to if you say that Adam HaRishon was created in the year 1, so then all of these numbers should just be read as they are. That Adam HaRishon was 100, it was year 130 when Shase was born, year 235 when Enosh was born, and so on and so forth, and it was 3,828 that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So two different opinions depending on whether you count the Shnas Tohu, that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in 3,828, or 3,829. Okay, that's point number one. There's a whole discussion about why we should count the Shnas Tohu or why not, and it depends on what took place during the Mabul, and if the sun and the moon stopped moving, if it stopped moving, so there was a year without motion, and so you have to compensate by adding on an extra year at the beginning. Whole complicated thing, which I'm not prepared to go into right now, but that is a big discussion. So, moving on, we had another uncertainty yesterday about when we talk about Adam lived for 130 years and then gave birth to Shase, and Shase lived for 105 years and then gave birth to Enosh, so we wanted to know whether that means that he lived 130 years, full years, that he lived for 130 years and maybe a couple of months and a couple of days afterwards, and then Shase was born, and then Shase lived for 105 times 365 and then Enosh was born, right? Or did it simply mean that Adam HaRishon was 130 years old when Shase was born, and Shase was 105 years old when Enosh was born?
According to the timeline, that as in Sol Kumrish, gathered for 930 years together.
But most of those years were after Shase was born.
Yeah, but he didn't die yet. He didn't die at the point that Shase was born at 130 years old, though. He lived on quite a bit longer beyond that.
Right, but in order to establish the chronology of when everything took place, it doesn't help us so much to know when Adam died, because there is no second event that we can start dating from the death of Adam. However, there's a continuous chain. If we know when Shase was born in Adam's lifetime, and we know when Enosh was born in Shase's lifetime, and we know when Canaan was born in Enosh's lifetime, then we're able, each time, each birth, we can use as a checkpoint on the timeline, and that'll take us to the next event that we know how far apart it was from the previous event.
Okay.
And so that's why I picked this particular series of events. You'll notice that there are some events here that have a star, like the Mabul and Galus Mitzrayim, that there's a star. Do you have a sheet?
I'll get a sheet
now. So you'll notice that there's a star, and that is because we're not able to date at those points simply by the births of different people, and so we needed to sort of go to an alternate type of event, not the birth of one of Adam's descendants, but rather some sort of a historical event in order to maintain the sequence of the timeline and properly distance one event from the next. So we don't know exactly when Shem was born to Noach. All that we know is that Arpachshad was born 2 years after the Mabul, and the Mabul took place 600 years after Noach was born, and that's how we know we're able to get back onto the timeline, not by going from Noach to Shem to Arpachshad, but rather by going from Noach to the Mabul to Arpachshad, and that's what fills in the missing link. And it's worth thinking about, although not in this context, why it is that the Torah didn't provide us with a continuous timeline going from Adam all the way down to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, why it was that of all of the descendants of Adam, it's particularly the birthday of Shem, the son of Noach, that's obscured from us, that's concealed, that the Torah does not see fit to mention. So we said yesterday that we weren't 100% sure when we talk about Adam being 130, what that means. However, the simplest meaning would seem to be that there had been 130 Rosh Hashanahs that passed over Adam, right, when Shais was born. And there had been 105 Rosh Hashanahs that had passed over Shais when Enosh was born. And so it could be that Shais was 129 years old biologically, right? Or sorry, 104 years old biologically when Enosh was born. Or it could be that he was 105 years old and 360 days when Enosh was born. It could have been either of them, but the fact is that there were 105 Rosh Hashanahs that he had lived through, and therefore he was officially declared 105 years old. And the same thing is true for Enosh. Enosh had 90 Rosh Hashanahs under his belt when Canaan was born. And that way, this timeline does create a continuous chronology, because you're never going to count one Rosh Hashanah for two people. If Adam had 130 Rosh Hashanahs when Shais was born, so then Shais' first Rosh Hashanah is the first Rosh Hashanah after his birth, and that's no longer being counted for Adam, it's instead being counted for Shais. Shais had 105 Rosh Hashanahs when Enosh was born, and the 106th Rosh Hashanah, we're no longer counting Shais, because now we're already counting Enosh. That was Enosh's first Rosh Hashanah, and so therefore there's never going to be an overlap. You'll never have 1 year counting for two people, or 1 year counting for nobody, because the way that we define how old they were is based on Rosh Hashanah. And there's a Maharal that I was searching for, but I was not able to find over the past two nights, which indicates in a very sharp way. I'll say it over in the vague way that I remember it, because I wasn't able to find it inside. But basically, there's a Rashi who comments that there are two times that the Jews are counted in the desert, and they're counted a few months apart, and the number is the same in both places. Do you remember where this is? Okay, It's too bad Mr. Ben Chaviv would have remembered. They're counted. God counts the Jews twice, within a few months of one another. Let's say one of them was in Cheshvan, and the second one was in Adar, or something along those lines. And the numbers are exactly the same. And so, I have to check again, because I thought I looked there and I didn't see it, but maybe I just didn't look carefully enough. So they're counted and it's the same number. So some Yishonim say, oh, there was a miracle. Nobody died in the intervening months. And that's why the number is the same. And nobody was born. Or the same number of people were born as the number of people, right? As precisely. So the question is, and it's not really births and deaths, it's people who turn 60 and people who turn 20, and the question becomes, like, what do you, it's really strange that the same number of people who turn 60 will be replaced by people who turn 20, or else then nobody turned 60 and nobody turned 20 during those years. So the Maharal says that when there are two different ways that we date people's birthdays, we can either date it from the day that they were born or from the Rosh Hashanahs. So everybody has two birthdays. It's the anniversary of the day that they were born and Rosh Hashanah. Everyone, that is, except for Adam HaRishon, who was created on Rosh Hashanah. So both birthdays are the same. And myself, I was also born on Rosh Hashanah. So I also only have one birthday and not two. I guess that it's... you know, too bad I don't get the double party. Right? Although you could say that it's even better, that we get to put all of our resources just into one. We don't have to split our resources. But
twice as old then. What's your birthday?
You get an Aliyah for birthday, so you only get one Aliyah.
And I gotta pay for it good, and I have to pay good money for it too. Aliyah's on Rosh Hashanah.
Not me, I got
some
So everybody has two birthdays, and when we talk about people turning 20 or people turning 60 for the purpose of the census in the Midbar, we're not talking about people reaching 20 times 365 or 60 times 365. We're talking about people reaching their 20th Rosh Hashanah or people reaching their 60th Rosh Hashanah. And so if the two censuses were taken between one Rosh Hashanah and the next, it makes perfect sense, as long as nobody died, it makes perfect sense that the numbers will be exactly the same, because nobody reached their 20th Rosh Hashanah in between one Rosh Hashanah and the next, and nobody reached their 60th Rosh Hashanah in between one Rosh Hashanah and the next. And therefore, right, that's how the Maharal explains that we're counting birthdays from the number of Rosh Hashanahs that a person experienced in their life. And so that seems to be what's happening in Bereishis chapter 5 and Bereishis chapter 11 as well, that we're counting the age that Adam was and that Shes was and Enosh, etc. How old were they when they had their son who was their Memali Makom? We're counting that by the number of Rosh Hashanahs that they experienced in their life, not by the number of days times 365. We're talking about the number of Rosh Hashanahs. And this is borne out by a number of traditions in the Torah Shebaal Peh. The Torah Shebaal Peh tells us that Avraham Avinu was 52 years old in Y2K, in the year 2000. He was 52 years old. And so if you go through the timeline all the way down to Avraham, you'll discover that he was 100 when Yitzchak was born. Avram was 100, and that was in the year 2048. So if you subtract the 48 from 100, you're left with 52. And so
in which parashah? Oh,
if this one has two, each time has a different number. It is just two, we're contrasting two, and there's a different number each time. But I don't think this is the one. I think we have to figure out what the dates are for each of them. Okay, I have to look into more. I tried to find that this particular machlokas, I wasn't able to find it, but I know that I've seen it. I even have it underlined, I think, in one of my chumashim, but I wasn't able to find exactly where it was. Thank you. Thank you very much. So that's, at least that's the beginning. I have to compare Pinchas and see, maybe the Ramban and the Rashi are in Parshas Pinchas. So we have a tradition in Torah Shebaal Peh that Avraham Avinu was 52 in Y2K, 2000. So that clearly corroborates that this timeline is accurate, because this timeline has Avraham at 52 in 2000, and therefore at 100 in 2048. So that is definitely very significant. Also, there's a tradition in Torah Shebaal Peh, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Tes, Amud Aleph, tells us that Matan Torah took place in the year 2448. And again, if you look down the timeline, you'll discover that Yetzias Mitzrayim, right, which took place only 50 days before Matan Torah, was in 2448. So it shows us that this timeline is pretty much accurate, that the way that we're dating, that Adam had 130 Rosh Hashanahs, then Shes had 105 Rosh Hashanahs, etc., etc., that Noach had had 600 Rosh Hashanahs by the time of the Mabul, and that there were two Rosh Hashanahs between the Mabul and our Pachshad, and then again there were 35 Rosh Hashanahs between our Pachshad and Shelach, etc., etc., that indicates that we're counting all of these years by the number of Rosh Hashanahs that passed, and not by the number of times that 365 days passed, or the number of times that a person experienced a full solar or lunar cycle in their lifetime. So that was the second issue that we raised yesterday that was unclear, but the Gemara in Avodah Zarah seems to clarify for us that we're on the right track when we're establishing the dates from creation, or the dates from Adam HaRishon, based on this particular timeline. We're not going to have any flexibility then to add a year or to subtract a year if all of these years are being calculated on the basis of Rosh Hashanahs that passed. Number three, we talked about Galus Mitzrayim. Every single thing up until Galus Mitzrayim, there's a pasuk that clearly indicates it. I listed the perek and the pasuk of all of the different events that are dated in the second column here. But when we get to Galus Mitzrayim, so it's not really clear how we know that Galus Mitzrayim took place for 210 years. And we talked about yesterday that there's this allusion, Redu Shama, Redu is Gematria 210. And so you get 210 based on a Gematria. And we also had that it says in the Torah that Avram's descendants would be enslaved for 400 years in the Bris Bin Abisarim. And 400 years from what? It's obviously not 400 years from the time that they arrived in Egypt. And so pretty much all of the Mefarshim say that it's 400 years from the birth of Yitzchak. So if you look in here where Yitzchak was born, you'll discover that Yitzchak was born in 2048. You just follow across. Yitzchak was born in 2048. That's when Avram gave birth to Yitzchak, and Yitzchak gave birth to Yaakov in 2108, because he was 60 years old. But Yitzchak was born in 2048. So if you count 400 years from the birth of Yitzchak, you'll discover that you get to 2448. Which is the year, right? So then if you figure out when did the Jews go down to Mitzrayim, it was in 2238. That we know because Yitzchak was 60 when Yaakov was born. Yaakov was 130 when he went to Mitzrayim. So 60 plus 130 is 190. So those are the years between when Yitzchak was born and when the Jews arrived in Mitzrayim. And what's left from the 400 is 210. So again, we have a second place where it's not 100% clear. There are other interpretations of what that 400-year promise means. The Ramban says it's around 400 years. Kliyakar says it's around 400 years. The Pirkei Rebbe Eliezer says it's around 400 years, not 400 years precisely. But Rashi and the Ibn Ezra and the Sefarno and the Rashbam all say that it's 400 years precisely dated from the birth of Yitzchak. And so that gets you 400 years. I didn't even need to put down Yaakov and Egypt. I could have just put down Yitzchak was born in 2048. 400 years, because the Bris Mila Besarim promised 400 years, so the Yitzias Mitzrayim must have been in 2448. And there's a third place where Yitzias Mitzrayim is hinted at, that it's going to be after 210 years of Egypt, and that is in the Pasuk, U'moshav b'nei Yisrael, asher yashvu b'mitzrayim, shiloshim shana, ve'arba me'oz shana. It was 30 years and 400 years. So what does that mean, 30 years and 400 years? Everyone is bothered. God promised Abraham that the Jews are only going to be exiles for 400 years. And here the Pasuk says that it was for 430 years. So what's the resolution between the two? So there's three different answers about what exactly, how can we resolve this contradiction between 400 and 430. Some people say the 400 is from the birth of Yitzchak. The 430 is from the Bris Bin Abisarim, which took place 30 years prior to the birth of Yitzchak. We have no evidence in Chumash about when the Bris Bin Abisarim took place, although we know that Avram was 75 when he went to Eretz Yisrael, and we know that the Bris Bin Abisarim is recorded in Chumash after he went to Eretz Yisrael, which would seem to indicate that the Bris Bin Abisarim took place within 25 years of Yitzchak's birth rather than 30 years prior to Yitzchak's birth. So that's a big question that the Rishonim have to resolve, that if Avram was 75 in the beginning of Lech Lecha, the Bris Min HaBesarim took place at the end of Lech Lecha, so it seems that he's more than 75, and Yitzchak was born when Avram was 100. I apologize for all the arithmetic, but everyone's following the arithmetic? So that would seem that it's hard to say that the Bris Bein HaBesarim, right, that the 430 is being dated from the Bris Bein HaBesarim. So the Ramban and the Kli Yakar and the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, as we said, they all suggest that maybe 400 means approximately 400, but really it's 430. And so it was really 430 years after Yitzchak was born that the Jews left Mitzrayim. However, that is going to totally interrupt and disrupt our chronology, because we know that Yitzchak was born in 2048, and if you count 430 years from Yitzchak's birth, then Yitzias Mitzrayim would have been not in 2448, but rather in 2478, and all of the subsequent events will have to be dated 30 years later. So the Churban Beis HaMikdash then wouldn't be 3828, it will be 3,858, which is going to throw off our entire calculation. That is what the Ramban suggests, and it's what the Kli Yakar suggests, and what the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer suggests. But in general, when we establish the timeline of Jewish history, we tend to discount this and prefer the number 210 for the years that the Jews were in Egypt, and the number 400 precisely for the number of years between the birth of Yitzchak and Yitzias Mitzrayim. Oh, so there's a third opinion about what happens to the 30 years, and that's the opinion of the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel. The Targum Yonasan ben Uziel says something very, very creative. He says that we know that when we count numbers, we can count years in cycles of one, and what's the next cycle of years that we would count in after one? What's the next most prominent number of years? Seven. Right? Shemitahs. So says the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, the 30 is referring to 30 times 7, and that's also a hint at the 210 years. It says it was 30 Shloshim Shana, meaning 30 sevens, 210. That's the number of years that they were in Mitzrayim proper, and it was also 400 years that they were in lands that were not theirs since the time of Yitzchak. And so you have a hint both at the number of years that elapsed since Yitzchak was born and the number of years that they actually spent in the territory of Egypt. And there you have another hint, aside from the redu and aside from the 400, you have a third hint that seems to suggest that Galus Mitzrayim, the number of years that the Jews spent in Mitzrayim proper, was 210 years. It was 30 times 7.
That's very creative. The Torah says 430 years. It doesn't seem to make a dichotomy of 430.
Right. On the other hand, the way that the Torah expresses it is Shloshim Shana ve'arba mi'os Shana. So why do we interrupt the Shloshim Shana and Arba mi'os Shana? Maybe it's two separate counts. And every time we darshan it, right? When we say it by Sarah also, right? We darshan why it was that the Torah said it that way. Right? But you find in other places, right, that it doesn't. It says, right, just the Lamashal, if we turn to Perek Hay of Sefer Bereishis, it'll tell us that you make Kainan Eser Shanim Usashameo Shana. Well, there you've also got Shanim and Shana. So we do tend, it seems, to always count the tens separately from the hundreds. Yeah, so that we'll have to figure out. Well, Targum, maybe the Targum has drushes for these also, I'm not sure. But this was a Targum, because the Targum is also bothered by the contradiction between 400 and 430, so he prefers to say that in order that it shouldn't be a contradiction, that we'll say it's two separate counts. So basically what we have is the following. If you count from the Shnas Tohu, you count from the year that the sun and the moon were set into motion The Beis HaMikdash seems to have been destroyed in 3829. If you count from the year that Adam HaRishon was created, then the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in 3828. Yesterday, the number that we were using was 3830, because the Braisa said that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed the year after Shemitah, going back, again, this was the table on the first page, going back from 5,775, counting back by sevens, you'll discover that the year 3,829 was a Shemitah, and therefore, if you say that the Shnas HaChorban was the year after Shemitah, so that means that the Shnas HaChorban was 3,830. And we saw that there were some Rishonim, Rashi in particular, who said that the Shnas HaChorban meant the first year that didn't have a Beis HaMikdash at all. And so Tisha B'Av, 3,829, was the year that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Right? But there were other Rishonim who said no, that it was literally the year that the Romans destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, that was the year after Shemitah, which means that it was 3,830. So there are three possible years for when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, either 3828, if you're counting from Adam HaRishon's creation, or 3829, if you're counting from the Shnas Tohu and from the time that the sun and the moon were set into motion, or 3830, if you're counting not forwards from Bries HaOlam, but backwards from nowadays, together with the tradition that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in the year after Shemitah. So we have three different possible years of when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Now, what's the significance of this? So keep in mind also, this is a little bit complicated, but we saw yesterday that there were two or three opinions about what year of the Shemitah cycle the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in. One opinion said it was destroyed in the year after Shemitah. One opinion said, this was the Gemara's Kasha, that it was destroyed in the sixth year of a Shemitah cycle. And a third opinion said that it could have been destroyed in any year of the Shemitah cycle. Now if you take the first opinion, then the Beis HaMikdash must have been destroyed in 3830. If you take the last opinion, that it was the sixth year of a Shemitah cycle, then it must have been 3828. If you want to say that it was destroyed in 3829, then you probably need to say that it wasn't any particular sixth year or first year, it could have been the Shemitah year itself. However, there were a number of Rishonim who wanted to have their cake and eat it too. They wanted to say that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in either 3828 or 3829, because that's what the table on the second side seems to indicate, counting from Adam HaRishon or from the Shnas Tohu, that it was 3828 or 3829. But they don't want to abandon the tradition of Chazal that the second Beis HaMikdash, like the first Beis HaMikdash, was destroyed in the year after Shemitah. And therefore, they say that we shouldn't count Shemitahs backwards from nowadays. We should first figure out when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, 28 or 29. And we know that it was destroyed in the year after Shemitah. So that means that Shemitah was either 28. If Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in 29, then Shemitah was 28. And if the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in 28, then Shemitah was 27. Put together the two traditions, the Beis HaMikdash could have been destroyed in 29 or 28, and it was destroyed the year after Shemitah. So then, that means that Shemitah was either 28 or 27. We assume, counting backwards from nowadays, that Shemitah was in 29. But these Rishonim say that Shemitah was either in 28 or it was in 27, which means that this year, 5775, according to those Rishonim, was not a Shemitah year at all. That the Shemitah year was either 5774 or 5773. So hence, you have the title, how do we know that this year is Shemitah? The answer is we don't, right? Other than the fact that we have been, that our ancestors, which included many, many great scholars and had a tradition going all the way back to the Churban, that they've been observing Shemitah on this cycle of 7 years. So that's how we know it. But there's no text that proves it. If anything, the texts seem to prove something else, that the Shemitah year should be 1 or 2 years earlier based on the dating from Adam HaRishon. And when was the Beis HaMikdash destroyed? So we've gone through the sources and found, right, depending on whether you're counting the Shnas Tohu, whether you're not counting the Shnas Tohu, and whether you're counting backwards, that there are three possible years that we can date the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash to. And why does it make a difference to us? Because potentially, based on when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, potentially we ought to be shifting the observance of the Shemitah year to an earlier year. Now it's interesting. There is a halacha lemaisa ramification of this. There is a halacha lemaisa ramification of this, and it's a little bit mechudash, because obviously we're not going to ask farmers in Eretz Yisrael to let the land lie fallow for 3 years because of a safek. If anything, and this I'm hesitant to say while I'm being recorded, so I'll preface it by saying that I'm not saying this as halacha l'maisa. I'm not even suggesting it as a hava amina. I'm saying that it's something that we shouldn't say. It's an ein lomar. We shouldn't say it.
But
you would think that there's a safek derabanan here. Shemitah nowadays is only midirabanan, and we're not sure whether Shemitah should be 5773, 5774, or 5775. So you would think there should be a safek derabanan, and we should be mekel. 5773, maybe yes Shemitah, maybe not Shemitah, lekula. 5774, maybe yes Shemitah, maybe not Shemitah, lekula. 5775, maybe yes Shemitah, maybe not Shemitah, lekula. Safek derabanan, lekula. Now, why don't we say this? There's two possible reasons why we don't say this. Number one, because we certainly shouldn't, meaning if you are mekel on all 3 years, then you're for sure violating the derabanan of one of them. Right, so we're not going to make a safek derabanan lekula where mimanav shach we're violating Shemitah. So we have to pick at least 1 year to observe as Shemitah in order to make sure that we at least have a chance of not violating Shemitah midrabanan. We have to at least give ourselves a chance of not being avaryanim, and so we pick the year which is most likely. That's one possibility, that we need to avoid transgressing Shemitah mimanav shach. We need to avoid transgressing Shemitah with 100% certainty. So if you have 33% chance that it's 73, 33% chance that it's 74, 33% chance that it's 75, then you at least need to observe one of them to make sure that there's a 33% chance that you observe Shemitah. It's not 100% chance that... Okay, that's one possibility. There's three possible years for what Shemitah is, so each one is 33%. Pardon me. I'm much more of a liberal arts type of person, but it happens to be that I had a good arithmetic teacher in elementary school, and so at least simple calculations I'm able to perform. So I have to thank whoever that arithmetic teacher was. Or maybe it has to do with the fact that when I got bored in high school, I used to make the multiplication tables. It has to do with the fact that I had... Okay, so... So that's one possibility. A second possibility, which I think is more likely, is that not every machlokas rishonim turns into a safek derabanan. Sometimes you go through the evidence, and you weigh how much evidence is on each side, and you weigh how weighty, how heavy each piece of evidence is. Sometimes you'll discover that the overwhelming majority of evidence is in favor of one of the opinions. And so perhaps that's what the Rishonim did, like the Rambam said, that the Hora, the Kabbalah, and the Maisa are Amudim Gidolim in Hora, that what our ancestors have been doing, all the great rabbis of all the generations, the year that they've been observing Shemitah, is a tremendously powerful proof, and that is so much more powerful than all of these chronologies that dated from Adam HaRishon, that it outweighs, it for sure, that 75 is much more likely to be the real Shemitah than 74 and 73. And that's why we observe 75. It's not because Miman of Shach, we've got to pick one, but it's because the likelihood of 75 being the real Shemitah on the basis of the fact that 68 was a Shemitah and that 61 was a Shemitah, and then in the times of the Rishonim already, so everyone was observing, let's say, the year 4207 as Shemitah, or 4004 as Shemitah. I'm just picking random numbers here. The fact that Shemitah has been observed that way in an uninterrupted chain is a much stronger proof than any chronology which is established on the basis of Adam HaRishon down all the way to Chorban Beis HaMikdash.
It's not necessarily proof. It's a Kabbalah. That's how they did it. So we do it. I think there's an analogy that maybe you could draw from Shabbos. If a person is lost in the desert, and he lost track of when it's Shabbos, so what does he do? He's supposed to start counting, and then he establishes Shabbos. It could be totally wrong, but that's his Shabbos.
So you're saying that it's what we call a hanhaga. Now, we don't know at all when it is,
really,
right? But we do this because that's what
and
we've been doing. It's like a chazaka, right? So I'm suggesting that now, the way I view the Kabbalah and the Maisa is that it's a raya gemura, it's a beror, because presumably, right, they observed Shemitah in 3829, and then the Jews 6 years later they wrote their prosbols in 3836. And then, one century later, they wrote their prosbols in 39-34, and in 40-32, and that they've been doing this every 7 years without interruption, and that's a raya, because presumably, right, we observe Shemitah now because we remember Shemitah being observed 7 years ago. And we observed Shemitah 7 years ago because we remembered it being observed 7 years prior to that. And we have no evidence to the contrary. Presumably, there was an uninterrupted chain of observance of Shemitah.
Just putting it out there.
The best food is Mesirah.
Precisely.
Is there any validity to the fact that it's a Rabbanan today? But Meheri Bonei HaMikdash, it's going to be transformed into a Daraisa.
Yeah, but when the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, we'll have a new cycle. We'll have a new right. That was what we discussed on Monday and Tuesday. So, right, so what's the practical ramifications then of the fact that 5774 or 5773 might be the real Shemitah? So the Vilna Gaon says that even though we observe 5775, and even though the Maisa and the Kabbalah are Amudim Gedolim of Hara, but there's one thing that we can do to be Machmir, to be Choshesh for the other opinions, and that is, he says, to write a Prusbol at the end of 5774, just in case that's the real Shemitah, he said. Write a Prusbol at the end of 5774. What's it going to take? It's nothing. You get a document, you sign it, you get witnesses. It's nothing. So he says, right, do that just in case that's a real Shemitah. We're not going to tell people to let their lands lie fallow for that whole year, but at the very least, well, we should perhaps ask people to write a Prusbol. Now, there's two ways that you can understand this. You can either say that the Vilna Gaon felt that 5775, like you said, is just a hanhaga. We don't know that it's the real Shemitah any more than the other two. We do it because that's what we've been doing for hundreds of years. And so therefore, when the cost is not so great, we'll be machmir for the other opinion, because it's not going to cause such a big upheaval to do so. Right? Or you could say that it's an even bigger chiddush that will say that really we know for sure that it's 5775. Right? But the opinion which is nidcha from halacha, the opinion that we reject when it comes to letting the land lie fallow, when it comes to prusbol, when it comes to loans, when it comes to gezel, whatever it might be, so there, because the costs are low and the benefits are very high, we say, why not take advantage and get the extra 0.5% likelihood that you're not collecting your debt in Isser, get the extra 1%, whatever the number is. It's a tiny, tiny percentage, but, you know, why not grab that percentage? That's an opportunity also to potentially avoid to potentially avoid any isurim. So that's the Vilna Gaon. It's a big chiddush. He says 75 is really Shemitah, right? But he suggests being machmir and writing a prosbul in 74. And again, what's that based on? It's based on the calculation starting from Brias HaOlam and counting the Shnas Tohu, which leads you to conclude that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in 38:29. So nowadays, most people, I did not write a prosbul at the end of last year. There's a second reason also to write prosbuls at the end of the year prior to Shemitah. Right? Some people say that the beginning of Shemitah is what cancels all loans, not the end of Shemitah. And so there's a second reason why the Rishonim suggest, that's probably why the Vilna Gaon said to do it in right before the Rosh Hashanah of Shemitah, and he didn't say to be worried about 57-73. Right? If each of the three have an equal probability, why wasn't the Vilna Gaon worried also about 57-73? So I think it's because he wanted to combine these two opinions. Number one, the opinion that you should write a prosbul before the beginning of Shemitah because that's what cancels out the loans. And number two, because he wanted to be machmir for the opinion of Rashi and the Rambam that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in 38:29, which means that Shemitah was really 38:28, 1 year earlier than we have it. The confluence of the two opinions is what led the Vilna Gaon to advise to write a prosbul earlier. Most people, I think, just write prosbuls at the end of Shemitah, right before the Rosh Hashanah of Motzai Shavuos. That's what most people do it. But Mirtz Hashem, that before this Motzai Shavuos, hopefully Mashiach will come, and this year, which is currently being observed as Shemitah, will turn into the first year of the next Shemitah cycle, which will be invested with Kedusha D'Oraisa for Yovel and for Shemitah and for Trumos and Maisvos and Challah, and everything should be anew, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should Behera be Mechadish, everything Chadish Yameinu Kekadem.